I'm Kate Winkler Dawson, the host of Tenfold More Wicked on Exactly Right. And this is my new show, Tenfold More Wicked Presents Wicked Words. I've interviewed writers about their best true crime stories, like Brian Burrow, who tells me about going to high school with a serial killer.
Dude, if you're lying about this, you're lying about everything.
Well, it's manipulation.
Yeah.
Tenfold More Wicked Presents Wicked Words is now available on Exactly Right with new episodes every Monday. Follow Tenfold More on Twitter and Tenfold More Wicked on Facebook and Instagram. Subscribe now and find Wicked Words on the Tenfold More Wicked feed on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen.
Southern Fried True Crime covers cases that are not suitable for young listeners, and there may also be some explicit language used. Listener discretion is advised. At 23 years old, some of us have it all figured out. Some of us are flailing, whether it's our career path or our love lives. By 23, I had already married and divorced. It seems crazy now that I thought my heart was ready. Patrick Marber wrote, "Have you ever seen a human heart? It looks like a fist wrapped in blood." And what do fists do? Fists fight. Quite literally, our fist-shaped heart is the muscle that fights to keep us alive. But when we talk about matters of the heart, that's when it's really a fist. Your heart is fighting your mind over what is best for you. Private First Class Kelly Bordeaux was 23 years old. She had joined the Army to become a combat medic. When she went missing, it seemed like your typical missing white woman, because Kelly was so beautiful. She didn't look like the soldier she was. She was brave. She was determined. She knew what she wanted, or thought she did, because she really was just 23 years old. That age when you will never be more beautiful, when you want to have fun and just be young. The age when your whole life is still ahead of you, when it's okay to still change your mind. Kelly was beautiful and fearless. But her heart, she was still trying to figure out her heart. Which meant there was more than one suspect when she disappeared. Welcome to episode 134, The Disappearance of PFC Kelly Bordeaux. Private First Class Kelly Bordeaux was stationed at Fort Bragg when she disappeared. The gentleman who requested today's case was stationed there at the same time in 2012. Though he didn't know Kelly. And this isn't the first time I've discussed Fort Bragg or Fayetteville, North Carolina. I found at least four episodes when I did a search through my scripts, so I'll keep the historic part of the base and city brief. Fayetteville, North Carolina is home of the 82nd Airborne and the U.S. Army Special Operations Command. Fayetteville is also home to several museums of military, art, and history, and is famous for being the first American city named for the Marquis de Lafayette, the French aristocrat and military officer who fought in the Revolutionary War. Although located in the city of Fayetteville, Fort Bragg extends between Cumberland, Hoke, Moore, and Harnett counties. Fort Bragg originated in 1918, originally as Camp Bragg, named after Confederate General Braxton Bragg. Since then, the base has grown to be one of the largest in the country. When Kelly enlisted in the Army in April of 2011, she was already married. Kelly Marie Henson was born on December 27, 1988, in St. Cloud, Florida. She had an older brother named Matt and an older sister named Olivia. Kelly's mom, Jonna, described her daughter as being her shooting star. Jonna said Kelly was, quote, a determined, beautiful young lady who had everything going for her in her life. She was fun-loving, and she loved helping people. Kelly grew up in her hometown in Florida, graduating from St. Cloud High School, where she was a cheerleader and beauty queen. She was 5'1", blonde, and tiny. She was as charismatic as she was beautiful. Kelly was a very popular girl in St. Cloud, and with her good looks, men always paid attention to her. She met her husband, Mike Bordeaux, in St. Cloud. He would later say it was love at first sight, and he knew the moment he saw Kelly that she was special. After high school, Kelly took a few dental hygiene classes at Valencia College. But she wanted more and felt joining the military was the best way to achieve her goals. Her grandfather was a veteran who encouraged Kelly. 3 months after Kelly married Mike Bordeaux, she decided to join the Army. Mike didn't like the idea. He was afraid of losing Kelly, worrying already about her being deployed. But he followed her to Fayetteville, determined to make their young marriage work. Kelly enlisted in April of 2011 and was stationed at Fort Bragg that November. Mike moved there a month later, finding the couple an apartment off base. Kelly worked at the base military hospital as a health service specialist, and she had dreams of becoming an officer. She was well-liked and admired by her fellow soldiers and commanding officers. Kelly's battalion commander, Lieutenant Colonel Heather Ness, said that Kelly had a vibrant spirit and that she loved life, was loyal, and was dedicated to the Army. Her family members would later talk about how she loved challenges and was very driven to succeed. An Army chaplain said Kelly was, quote, a tough, friendly soldier with a courageous personality and selfless love for others. Her husband, Mike, on the other hand, was struggling in their new hometown. He was unable to find a job and was unhappy and drinking a lot. A private investigator later pointed out that the stress of adjusting to a new life in another state put their marriage under pressure. You can only imagine how hard it is to leave your home state at such a young age. I'm not sure it's fair to say that Mike wasn't as career-driven as Kelly. He was following his wife's career, thinking he would figure out his own once he was settled in Fayetteville. But what Mike didn't know is that his wife had met another man before she even joined the Army. She met Justin Thompson in St. Cloud in a bar. Like most men, he was instantly attracted to her and did not know she was married. She didn't wear her wedding ring to the bar when she was out with her friends. One of Kelly's friends did eventually let it slip that she was married, but Justin didn't care. He said he didn't feel like it was his problem. As Mike Bordeaux was struggling in Fayetteville, he had no idea his wife had been having an affair for over a year. Kelly had only been married to Mike for about 2 years when she disappeared. And though he would publicly insist the couple had no problems, they were actually in what he later admitted was a trial separation. I'm going to pause now for a short commercial break. What and when Mike knew about the other man in his wife's life is debatable. Mike Bordeaux would almost always insist he and Kelly had been happily married. But in reality, Kelly was often going out drinking, and not just when Justin came to town. She had had a big social circle back in St. Cloud, and she was trying to make friends in her new life in Fayetteville. But by April 2012, the other man, Justin Thompson, said their relationship was serious. He said in interviews that the couple had actually kicked Mike out and that Kelly and Mike were done. He said Kelly was going to file for divorce, and Justin planned to move to Fayetteville, just as Mike Bordeaux had, to follow Kelly as she followed her dream. In the first week or so of April, Justin visited Kelly in Fayetteville. They went to a bar near Kelly's apartment called Froggy Bottoms. While there, they met a man named Nick Hulbert. Nick gave Kelly his number, seemingly to just make friends with her. But Justin had his doubts right away. He went back to St. Cloud, but stayed in constant contact with Kelly, who on the night of Friday the 13th, April 2012, told him she was going drinking at Froggy Bottoms with Nick. It wasn't romantic, at least not in Kelly's mind. She was the kind of girl who worked hard and played hard, but she would never drink and drive. So she was calling Nick for a ride to the bar. Justin said he wasn't just jealous, that he had gotten a weird vibe from Nick Hulbert. He said Nick stared too intensely at people and he thought he was creepy. Justin later said he told Kelly that she should be afraid of Nick, and she laughed it off. And he said, well, bring your pepper spray. At around 8 p.m., Nick picked Kelly up from her apartment and took her to Froggy Bottoms. They played pool, and Kelly sang karaoke. She was having a good time. She was singing, cutting up, flirting with other guys, just being friendly. And remember, she thought she was just going out with a friend. But Nick Hulbert would later say he thought it was a date, and that he was pissed that Kelly wasn't paying attention to him. At 12:46 a.m., now on April 14th, Kelly sent a text to Justin, saying that Nick was going to take her home. She paid her tab as Nick went to get the car. At around 1:20 a.m., Kelly was seen leaving the bar with Nick on surveillance footage. When Kelly left, she wasn't drunk. This was according to bar staff and indicated by her bar tab. She just hadn't had that much to drink. Later, Justin received a text from Kelly that said, "Got home safe. I'm going to bed. Call me tomorrow." Justin thought this text was weird because the text he had received before said, "Hey, call me. Call me, call me." Justin tried calling all weekend, but he got no answer. He told Kelly's family that he thought something was wrong. According to Justin, he called police on Saturday and Sunday, but they didn't take him seriously about her disappearance. When he called on Monday, they finally did. That's because now the Army had reported PFC Kelly Bordeaux as missing. On April 16th, 23-year-old Kelly was reported missing by Fort Bragg officials after she didn't report to work. Missing posters said she was 5'1" and 102 pounds with blonde hair and brown eyes. She was last seen wearing a pink tube top, black shorts, and pink bedazzled flip-flops. Kelly took a selfie of herself and sent it to her sister Olivia before she went out. Olivia told her that she thought she looked cute. Kelly's commanding officer knew something was wrong when she didn't show up for work on time. Her husband, Mike, later echoed this, saying Kelly was very responsible and would not have missed work. I am always worried at this point in most stories that people might listen and victim blame. It's why I stressed Kelly's age in the opening of this episode. Not that her age should matter, but still. She married at a really young age, and I did the same, so I think I identify with her a bit. But it's more than that. I think all of us remember our early 20s as the fun time in our lives, when we did hang out in bars and play pool with friendly strangers, when we might accept a drink from a cute guy, regardless of our relationship status. I am not excusing Kelly for being an adulterer. I'm saying I understand being 23 and making bad choices, and not understanding really the consequences of my choices. But Kelly was responsible. You don't join the Army without a strong work ethic, or you certainly don't last long there. Kelly liked to have fun, and her personal life might have been messy, but she took her job and commitment to the Army very seriously. Searches for Kelly immediately began. Many were conducted in back swamps between the bar and Interstate 295. There were ground searches and helicopter searches. On April 18th, more than 50 police officers and 60 soldiers searched a heavily wooded area off Ramsey Street and a pond around 8 miles away. According to WRAL, quote, "The case attracted nationwide attention for months and drew volunteers from across the country to Fayetteville to help investigators in the military search for Bordeaux in secluded areas around Froggy Bottoms and in North Fayetteville." Kelly's family traveled to North Carolina to pass out flyers and help with the search. And her husband, Mike, helped as well. In a scene reminiscent of Gone Girl, Mike Bordeaux pleaded with the public for help at one of the two vigils. "I want to thank everyone for coming out in support of Kelly. I just want to find my wife," he said. He went on the Today Show and denied any marital problems, telling Matt Lauer, quote, "We were very happy. We weren't getting a divorce." Ironically, both Mike and Kelly's boyfriend, Justin, were back home in St. Cloud when she disappeared. Mike said he was visiting family, but others say the couple were separated and that Mike was going home to give Kelly some space. Either way, the police were able to alibi both men. And yet, despite another obvious suspect, the police kept their sights on Mike Bordeaux. A lot of Fayetteville residents assumed he was responsible too. It's always the husband, right? Especially when the wife has been cheating. Police spoke with bar patrons and employees and looked at surveillance footage. They learned that Kelly left the bar with Nick Hulbert at around 1:20 a.m., but Nick came back later alone. Nick told police he dropped Kelly off at the entrance to her apartments. It was about a quarter mile from her actual apartment building. He said he dropped her off that far away because she didn't want him to pull up to the door. He said he thought maybe there was someone at the apartment she didn't want him to see, so he left. And then he said that was the last time he ever saw her. Nick insisted he didn't have anything to do with her disappearance. And then police told the media that the last person to see Kelly alive was Nick Hulbert, a 25-year-old sex offender, and that Nick was, quote, a person with information. Hulbert joined the searches for Kelly and also went on television telling his story and pleading with the public for information about Kelly's disappearance. I'm going to pause now to hear a word from today's sponsors. This holiday season, I want to give a gift to my loved ones that is thoughtful and meaningful. That's why I'm giving everyone I care about StoryWorth. StoryWorth is an online service that helps you and your loved ones preserve precious memories and stories for years to come. Every week, StoryWorth emails your relative or friend a thought-provoking question of your choice from their vast pool of possible options. Questions like, what's the bravest thing you've ever done in your life? After 1 year, StoryWorth will compile all your loved ones' stories, including photos, into a beautiful keepsake book. It's been an amazing way for my family to keep memories alive, and I can't wait to make new ones for my kids. The funny stories are the best. My aunt told me about how my dad loved to play the Three Stooges when he was a kid. He could mimic the voices and would throw himself around their living room, playing every part, and he did it right in front of the TV to annoy his older sisters. With StoryWorth, I'm giving those I love most a thoughtful, personal gift from the heart and preserving their memories and stories for years to come. Go to StoryWorth.com/SouthernFried and save $10 on your first purchase. That's StoryWorth.com/SouthernFried to save $10 on your first purchase. By now, I'm sure Southern Fried listeners know I play Best Fiends all the time. In my opinion, it's way more fun than other Match 3-style puzzle games. I swear, 30 minutes go by like 30 seconds. So stop crushing the same old candy and try a puzzle game with something fresh to offer. In Best Fiends, you play through an actual storyline. The good guys are your fiends and the bad guys are slugs. The more you play, the more fiends join your team, and the more powerful they become, helping you solve increasingly challenging puzzles as you progress through the game. Around Halloween, I did a 30-task challenge called Fright Night to earn a special fiend, Temper, who was in costume as the Slug King. Then I got to go trick-or-treat with Captain Slugbow. And there's a new fiend named Trill, who is an oak tree hopper. In Trill's clock tower, you win new levels to collect fiendship bracelets and help decorate her tower. Best Fiends is an action-packed adventure and a brain-boosting puzzle game all rolled into one. And with new content added all the time, you're never bored. Download Best Fiends free today on the App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. When Kelly made friends with Nick Hulbert, she had no idea about his past. She had no idea where he lived. She just considered him a drinking buddy. He worked at Froggy Bottoms as a helper or bar back. She thought he was harmless, despite Justin's misgivings. Born in November of 1986, Nick was 16 years old when he was convicted of 2 counts of indecent liberty with a child and 1 count of child abuse. He was sentenced the same day to serve between 65 and 87 months in prison. Nick Hulbert had sexually assaulted and beaten a 5-year-old girl in December of 2002. Private investigator David Washburn later said the girl was still in a wheelchair 10 years later. Nick had been released from prison in July of 2008 after serving a little less than 5 years, and his parole ended in April of 2009. That is a sickeningly short sentence, and naturally, Nick failed to register as a sex offender when he moved to a makeshift campsite in the woods behind Froggy Bottoms. He had also lived in his truck for a while before making the campsite. You will have to look at photos of Nick to see why he didn't raise alarms with Kelly. When we think of seeing someone like Nick Hulbert, we would expect to see an unkempt man. A dirty man, maybe, who needs a shave at least. Nick was young and managed to look presentable, enough that a girl like Kelly thought they were buddies. Police looked at Kelly's cell phone records from the night she disappeared, and her phone last pinged off a tower near the Froggy Bottoms Bar and Interstate 295. And still, the police kept looking at Mike Bordeaux as a suspect. They asked him if he found out Kelly was having an affair, and suggested that's what caused him to kill her. But Mike said he didn't know Kelly was having an affair. He also said he didn't want to hear about the affair. He just wanted to find Kelly. He didn't care that she was cheating, as long as she was found safe. As time went on, Mike did start to question if her boyfriend, Justin Thompson, had anything to do with Kelly's disappearance. Even after interviewing him, police still thought Mike was responsible. Even though Nick Hulbert was the last person seen with Kelly, they thought Mike had something to do with it. They were thinking that because Kelly wasn't reported missing until the 16th, Mike could have driven to Fayetteville, done something to Kelly, and then had time to drive back to St. Cloud for an alibi. And when police found out Kelly had a boyfriend, he became a suspect as well. But Justin also had an alibi. He was also in Florida. Justin told police he thought Nick Hulbert was responsible for Kelly's disappearance. Justin also said he didn't think her husband Mike had anything to do with it, even though everyone was saying he did. Justin felt that Mike was too, quote, emotional, lovey-dovey, to do that to Kelly. Justin said Mike was the type to think he could get Kelly back before he had to get rid of her on his own. It's nice of him to take up for Kelly's husband, I guess, but his interviews are cringeworthy. He comes off as very cocky. But finally, police did decide to focus on Nick Hulbert. On April 20th, because they didn't have enough to arrest him for murder, police arrested Nick for failing to register as a sex offender. He was convicted on October 12th and was later released on parole again on May 10th, 2013. Around 2 weeks after Kelly went missing, her husband Mike went on the Today Show and said he was suspicious of Nick Hulbert. Mike said there's no way Kelly would not have made it to the apartment if she was dropped off at the place Nick said she was. Mike said he had never met Nick Hulbert, and that he and Kelly had never been to Froggy Bottoms before. When asked about how his marriage was going, Mike said nothing was wrong, and that he and Kelly were very happy together, and that he was in Florida to visit his family and nothing else. He said that he had wanted a baby, and Kelly did too, and that's why he moved to Fayetteville to be with her. Though he did say she had changed her mind about wanting a baby, hinting that there were problems. On May 6th, 2012, Fayetteville Police Detective Jeff Locklear told the News and Observer, quote, "It's a frustrating investigation. It's tough." Locklear said they'd received hundreds, if not thousands, of tips, and large groups of people, usually around 100, but sometimes close to 500 people, were still searching for Kelly. There was an $8,000 reward. In July, searches were still going on. There wasn't much on Kelly's disappearance in newspapers until March of 2013, when it was announced that a $25,000 reward was being offered. A year after her disappearance, and police still didn't have any new information. Kelly's family continued handing out flyers, holding news conferences, running a Facebook page, and doing everything they could to raise awareness about Kelly's disappearance. On May 20th, 2013, The Army legally declared Kelly Bordeaux dead. They said it was to let Kelly's family receive survivor's benefits. Private investigator and bounty hunter David Marshburn entered the case on his own and much earlier than anyone else knew. From the moment David saw Nick's interview on TV where he told the media that he dropped Kelly off near her apartment, he said he knew Nick was lying and that he had done something to Kelly. Marshburn decided to start searching for Kelly on his own. Every day, for over 2 years, David worked on the case. Within days of Nick being released from prison, David befriended him. He told Crime Watch Daily, quote, "I had to be his best friend. I had to be a good friend to him." David went to where Nick was living, knocked on the door, and said, "Nick, I'm David Marshburn. I'm a PI. I'd like to talk to you about Kelly. I don't believe you done it." David said, quote, "I told him right out of the gate, but I believe you can help me to clear your name so we can find her." David planned to follow 3 stages. In 1, he would act like Nick didn't have anything to do with Kelly's disappearance. In 2, he'd act like maybe Nick did have something to do with it. And 3, he'd tell Nick that he knew Nick did it, and then Nick wouldn't deny it. It was pretty easy for David to befriend Nick. Nick needed money, so David would give it to him. He said even if Nick wouldn't talk to him about Kelly, he kept agreeing to see him. Nick would call him asking for food or cigarette money, and David would drop whatever he was doing to go give him the money. But months went by, and Nick Hulbert wasn't confessing. David told Crime Watch Daily, quote, "I wanted to take him to a barn somewhere, start cutting his fingers off until he told me where the hell she was. That's how mad I was, how ticked off I was. I was so close, yet he wouldn't give it to me." So David kept trying. He tried multiple ruses. And months in, one of them almost worked. David tried to convince Nick that he had worked out a deal with prosecutors. He created a fake plea deal on paper and showed it to Nick, saying it was real. In the deal, if Nick told David where Kelly was, then he would get probation and rehabilitation. Nick would confess to the murder, apologize, get mental health help, and stay in an apartment complex where he'd get a computer to work on. Nick read the fake plea deal a bunch of times and then told David he wouldn't sign it because the prosecution would just take the deal back. Even though this ruse didn't work, David was still happy. The fact that Nick had considered the deal confirmed for him even more that Nick was guilty. I'm going to pause now to hear a final word from today's sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. What interferes with your happiness or prevents you from achieving your goals? For me, it's anxiety and depression. Medication helps, but for me, talking to someone who is objective about my problems can be really helpful and cathartic. BetterHelp is there for me, and they will be there for you too, with licensed professionals who specialize in all kinds of issues like trauma, grief, depression, anxiety, and family or relationship conflicts, the kind of things that we all face every day. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own specialized therapist. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. From your phone, laptop, or tablet, you can start communicating with your counselor in under 48 hours. You can send a message to your BetterHelp counselor at any time, and everything you share is confidential. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/southern. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Southern. Today's episode is also brought to you by Olive & June, the amazing at-home nail salon. I love having a great manicure, and I like to try out new colors all the time, but I don't always have time to go to the nail salon. And I like to do my own nails while I'm relaxing, watching TV. But they've never looked salon quality until now. I got the Olive & June Studio Box, which comes with everything you need, including this cool accessory called the Poppy. You attach it to a brush to stabilize your hand. So now, my right hand doesn't look like a five-year-old painted it. The Olive & June Studio Box came with 13 different colors to try, all of which are hot shades right now, from nude to a deep midnight blue. And the polish is so durable. It does not chip, and it lasts for about a week, and sometimes longer. I suggest starting with the Olive & June Mani system with 6 polishes. It breaks down to just $2 a mani, and I used to spend over $40 for one gel mani. Getting beautiful salon perfect nails at home is now a dream come true with Olive & June. Your new nail life is here. Visit oliveandjune.com/southernfried and use code southernfried for 20% off your first mani system. This is an exclusive offer you can only get here. That's oliveandjune.com/southernfried, code southernfried, for 20% off your first mani system. oliveandjune.com/southernfried, code southernfried. David was more determined than ever to get a confession out of Nick. He decided to try another ruse. He'd tell Nick that he was about to be indicted for Kelly's murder. David said, quote, "The reason I wanted to do an indictment is because I don't understand indictments. A lot of people don't unless you're in the legal realm. So an indictment will be easy to BS about and hard for him to understand." David created a fake indictment, which led Nick to believe he was under police surveillance. And David played into this. He even put a bondsman outside Nick's place in an unmarked Crown Vic. A Crown Vic is an old classic model police car. And it worked. Nick went to David and said, "I told you, man, they're watching me. They're coming after me. They got something." At this point, Nick was ready to sign the fake plea deal David had shown him. Nick said he would show David where he buried Kelly's body. David said, quote, "As soon as we pull into Froggy Bottoms, I can't even get the damn thing in park, and he's jumping out and going straight back to where he killed her." They walked over to where Nick had been living, in the makeshift camp in the wooded area. David asked Nick if he was ready to tell him what happened, and Nick said yes. Nick told David that he and Kelly had gone to Froggy Bottoms bar. And at around 1 a.m., Kelly said she was ready to go home. As she paid her tab, Nick went to the car and waited for her. As she was paying her tab, the bartender evidently told her, "Be careful of this guy. He's a sex offender." Kelly had no idea about Nick's past, and she was furious. She left the bar and started walking home. As she walked, she passed by Nick's car. He said, "Hey, I thought I was taking you home." And she said something like, "Fuck you, you fucking child molester." And then Nick ran up behind her and hit her. He said he knocked her out and then put her in his car and drove to his campsite. He said he pulled her out of the car, laid her on the ground, took her clothes off, and in his words, began having sex with her. Kelly Bordeaux woke up as this man was raping her and started screaming. Nick's exact words to David were, "While I was on top of her, she started screaming." Nick then said he grabbed a rock and beat Kelly in the head until she was dead. He said he then wrapped her head in a trash bag, I suppose to stop her blood from being found at his campsite. He doesn't admit this part, but he did go back to the bar after he killed Kelly. He was seen on surveillance footage and had several more drinks. This was likely a dumb attempt to set up an alibi. Dumb, because there's almost always security cameras around bars. A few hours later, he left the bar and then buried Kelly's body in the nearby woods. Then he used Kelly's phone to text Justin, saying she made it home. And then he threw her phone in a nearby river. An autopsy would later show that Kelly did die of blunt force trauma. She'd been hit in the face multiple times. Nick led David and his cadaver dog to the area where he buried Kelly. He wasn't sure of the exact spot, but the cadaver dog led them to a shallow grave where Kelly was buried. David told Crime Watch Daily, quote, "So we dig down a little and find pieces of the jacket. So we're digging again and find the leg bone. We dig again There's the whole jacket. We take the jacket and pull it back, and there she is, as described, with the bag on her head. I say a little prayer, and I said, "Baby girl, you are going home." David then called Detective Jeff Locklear to the crime scene. Nick confessed to Locklear as well. And this confession was caught on a body cam. What Nick told the detective was a bit different than what he told David. Nick said he picked Kelly up. They went to a bar and everything was going good. They were drinking, playing pool. Kelly was singing karaoke. And then someone told her that Nick was a sex offender. And when Kelly said, "Fuck you, you fucking child molester," then Nick said he, quote, snapped, zoned out, and hit her. He said he put her in his car, drove to where he was staying, and took her out of the car. He said she woke up disoriented and started screaming, and then he got scared. He didn't want anyone to hear her. So he said he hit her again with his fists until she was dead. Nick did not say he was raping Kelly when he woke up. He explicitly said they did not have sex. He now admitted he went back to the bar after he killed Kelly. Then around 4:30 a.m. or 5 a.m., Nick took Kelly's body and buried her. He didn't know the spot where he buried her. He just drove around until he found a place. When Nick was asked if he wanted to follow officers to the grave, he said no. You can see on the video that the officers have a difficult time walking through the woods to get to the grave. There was no path, and they were ducking under tree limbs and walking around brush. They walk for around 2 minutes until they get to the grave, and you can hear David say, "There's a flip-flop." Remember, Kelly was wearing pink flip-flops that night. When Kelly's family found out what private investigator David Marshburn had done, they were blown away. Kelly's sister Olivia told Crime Watch Daily, quote, "He's doing it for my family and we don't even know. And I'm like, he's just doing this because he wants to make that difference. It's astronomical. It's more than my family could even show gratitude for." The Fayetteville police also willingly admitted they couldn't have solved the case without David. Detective Michael Ballard pointed out, quote, "He can do things the police can't do. I'm glad he was persistent because it brings closure to her family." On May 14, 2014, Kelly's body was recovered in a dense, deeply wooded area off River Road near the Interstate 295 corridor. This area is around 4 miles from the Froggy Bottom Bar, and it had not been actively searched before, and Nick had no connection to the area. It was just a desolated place where he found to bury her body. After her body was found, her sister Olivia told the Orlando Sentinel, quote, "It's not the answer we wanted, but I told Kelly I was going to bring her home no matter what. At least now we know she's coming home." She told WRAL, quote, "I think my initial reaction was that I was more mad than anything. I mean, why today of all days? What made you decide to say something? And on top of that, what made you wait so long? We literally have been through hell and back, begging and pleading and praying, just trying to bring her home." She continued, "I don't feel any better about the situation than I did yesterday. The knowledge of knowing that she's not being held captive, that she's not being tortured, that's where the partial relief comes in." On May 31st, a public funeral for Kelly was held at Cornerstone Family Church in St. Cloud, Florida. Private First Class Kelly Marie Henson Bordeaux was given a full military funeral. Her coffin was draped in the American flag, taps were played, and the flag was presented to Kelly's mother. Kelly was buried at Mount Peace Cemetery. Her gravestone reads, "What we keep in memory is ours unchanged forever. You will always be loved." On August 7, 2015, Nick Hulbert pled guilty to first-degree murder and first-degree kidnapping. With the plea, he no longer faced the death penalty. Kelly's family agreed to the deal so they wouldn't have to go to trial. District Attorney Billy West said, quote, "The only way he needs to leave the Department of Corrections is in a pine box." Hulbert's attorney said that it was a tragic situation, that Nick was drunk and snapped. This was when Kelly called him a sex offender. His attorney said, quote, His character was put aside. His good sense was put aside. That's disgusting. I am someone who tries to desperately believe in rehabilitation. And then I cover a case like this. If Nick Hulbert had gotten real prison time for sexually assaulting a 5-year-old, would Kelly Bordeaux still be alive? On the day Hulbert was sentenced to life without parole, he addressed Kelly's family in court saying, quote, "I realize there isn't anything I could say or do that would ease the pain and suffering that you have endured because of my actions, but I feel compelled, not only by myself but by God, to attempt to apologize to you and your family. Hopefully one day you can find it in your heart to forgive me." According to the Fayetteville Observer, Kelly's mom, Jonna, spoke angrily from the witness stand during her impact statement, at one point demanding Hulbert look at her. Jonna said, quote, "You, Mr. Hulbert, I hate. You took something so precious from me. You took potential grandchildren from me. You took my baby girl. My heart is not big enough. I think I'm a good person, a forgiving person, but not when you brutally, violently, senselessly. It's not an accident. It wasn't like, oh, sorry. No, I can't forgive something like that. I'm sorry." Jonna told Nick that Kelly didn't judge people, but she wished that she had, so she would have, quote, "known what kind of demon you are." Jonna looked directly at Nick Hulbert when she described what he did to her daughter. She said, "You beat her with your fists, with rocks, and then buried her in the woods like a dog. You took my baby girl for nothing, and you want to say sorry? 25 months went by to say sorry. I don't have anything else to say except you can go to hell." Kelly's brother Matt was escorted out of the courtroom after he had an outburst. He had been reprimanded multiple times, but the judge noticed Matt looked like he was going to attack Nick Hulbert, so Matt was taken out. And Matt later told WRAL being 10 feet away from him and trying to stay calm and not go over there and assault him was hard, so I was actually kind of glad that the judge just kicked me out. Kelly's sister Olivia told the Fayetteville Observer, quote, "Everybody thinks it's closure, but it's not. Him going to jail for the rest of his life won't bring her back." And that is almost always what we hear from families about closure. Closure isn't real. You just learn to live with the pain. The listener who sent me this case, Lance Kennison, is a decorated military veteran as well as a former military police officer and detective. His email moved me so much. He said, quote, "This case was known well throughout Fort Bragg during her disappearance. I instructed my soldiers to ensure they went out in pairs, as what little was known of the case stated she was out by herself. While I was not in the same unit with Kelly, her story hit me hard at the time." And sir, your words hit me hard. We live in a time when the internet rails against having to teach young women to only go out in pairs, when we should be raising better men. This case wasn't 50 years ago, 20 years ago, or even 10 years ago. Nothing has changed. Kelly was brave and military trained. It probably didn't even occur to her that she was in danger. She was just so angry when she found out what Nick was. And as a fearless young soldier with her whole life in front of her, she just wanted to walk home. Southern Fried True Crime is written, hosted, and produced by me, Erica Kelly. Today's episode was researched by the talented Haley Gray, and Mr. Kelly gets a tiny shout-out for having better eyesight than me. Southern Fried's original music is by Rob Harrison of Gamma Radio, and the original graphic art is by Coley Horner. And Coley, I am so sorry I missed seeing you on your birthday. My next visit to your town is going to be longer, I promise. I miss you, sweet friend. Thank you so much to listener Lance Kennison for sending me this story and telling me how it affected him. I really appreciated your perspective. Please submit case suggestions to southernfriedtruecrime@gmail.com. I do not accept suggestions on social media, and I apologize if I am unable to answer your email. I get dozens of suggestions a week, and it takes a lot of time to go through and check out each case. I will contact you if I plan to use the case you submit. Thank you all so much for sending in these suggestions. I truly get my most interesting cases from listener suggestions, so keep them coming. And don't forget to come to our new Facebook group. Search for Southern Fried True Crime Fans Discussion Group. We still worship our patron saint, Dolly Parton, share fun memes and delicious recipes. Our group is a safe and fun corner of Facebook, and by God, we mean it when we say no shit ass is allowed. It's not just a motto, it is how we run the group. If you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe, and please tell a friend or rate and review on iTunes. I am also on most large platforms like iHeart, Stitcher, and Spotify, as well as Stitcher Premium, where you can listen ad-free. Until next time, thanks so much for listening. Y'all take care.